Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Okay, so we'll gather ourselves now and we'll have a look at what's coming up in TV and cinema.
Yeah, sitting around. Sitting around instead of running around.
Yes, and look, it doesn't seem important right now in the grand scheme of things, but we'll be glad of these recommendations from Monday to Friday when we all calm down. And I'm joined today by film critic for the Business Post, John McGuire, and writer Sarah Maria Griffin. Welcome, guys.
Good morning, Brendan. How are you doing?
So it's a big week for cinema releases. We'll start there. John, Alien Romulus in cinemas from next Friday. I'll admit, I didn't know that the Alien franchise was still going.
Oh, it's still going. Yeah. This is the seventh or the ninth, depending on how you count Alien spin-off. This is a midquel, so it's not quite a sequel, not quite a prequel. It's a standalone sideways story that takes place in the 57 movie years of time between Ridley Scott's original Alien and James Cameron's follower Upper Aliens. And it's basically, and Alien has always been a haunted house movie in space. The spooky ghosts are swapped out for these terrifying monsters that come from beyond the cosmos. We can't understand them. We don't know their motivations. We don't know anything about them. But they want to eat us, basically. And that's what it's always been about, which suits the director here is Fede Alvarez. It's not Ridley Scott anymore. And his back catalogue includes an Evil Dead remake and the two Don't Breathe movies. So he's a horror specialist. Now, the plot and the character descriptions have been kept mostly under wraps. But what we do know is that the story follows a group of young space colonizers on a distant world who scavenge for raw materials on an abandoned space station and come up against the xenomorphs, the most terrifying life form in the universe. And the cast, or the menu, I suppose, depending on your perspective, includes Callie Spaney, who was Priscilla recently in Sofia Coppola's Priscilla movie, and Isabella Marquette, who was Dora the Explorer in the Dora the Explorer movie, David Johnson and Archie Renu, all young rising actors. But there's no return for Sigourney Weaver, the iconic Ellen Ripley. But we're not done with the Alien universe just yet. There's probably going to be a sequel to this.
And
but
are they
Noah
usually
Hawley,
quite well done? Yeah,
I think, yeah, they're competent at least, you know. But these are horror movies.
There's the line for the poster. Competent at least. Okay, that's Alien Romulus.
Alien Romulus, yeah.
Cinemas next Friday. Now, Sarah, we need to talk about It Ends With Us. So the book, the Colleen Hoover book, was a sensation. And then there's huge hype around the movie. There's also feuds. There's also controversy. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. It Ends With Us. It was sort of a global bestseller on an unbelievable scale. To this day, if you walk into any bookshop across Ireland or almost anywhere in the world, you'll see Colleen Hoover's name splayed all over the bestseller charts. She emerged through self-publishing online and was sort of picked up by the readers of TikTok, who championed her and made her a star. And they ensured her books went from obscurity to total sweep. So the film is long awaited and has a huge amount of pressure on it. It has already made a tremendous amount of money, but there is, from what we can tell with the press junket that is currently happening, ice backstage. Blake Lively and Jason Baldoni are not communicating during interviews. There are shards and snippets of unkind things they're saying about one another leaking out every single day. So for a story that is about a heavy enough story, It Ends With Us, it's about a florist called Lily Bloom, which is a deeply creative name for a florist, and a terrible abusive relationship that she gets into. So I would say to viewers, you know, go in with that expectation. This is not a romance
story. It's not a frothy rom-com.
It's not a frothy rom-com. It reflects some of Colleen Hoover's own life and her own experiences as well. There's been criticism about how she's handled and portrayed these kind of plot lines, but either way, it has reached a mass audience. So week on week, as the film kind of succeeds, I guess we'll find out what was really going on behind the scenes.
Okay. And that's in cinemas now. Let's do a bit of TV. We might go back to cinema. John, Vince Vaughn, and I suppose the kind of films he made, they kind of went out of fashion a bit at Hollywood. He's back on Apple TV from Wednesday with a new series, Bad Monkey. Is
Bad
that any
Monkey,
good?
Is it any good, Brendan? Is it a bit yes, I suppose it kind of is. This is from a character. In a Vince Vaughn-y kind of way. Now, he was out in the press last week bemoaning the fact that his chosen genre, the kind of raunchy, mid-budget adult comedy, that Hollywood doesn't make those kind of movies anymore. Now, Vince makes a good point there, but there's many genres that have all but disappeared in the race for Marvel blockbuster supremacy. The romantic comedies are gone, westerns are gone, screwball comedies are gone. This is an adaptation of a Carl Hyacin novel from 2013, or the bestseller indeed. And Hyacin is based in Florida. He's a very popular writer. These are books that sell very well. And he's written loads of them. And his native Florida, he's a great journalist. He's got a journalist's eye for his native Florida. So Vaughn plays this character, Andrew Yancey. He's a former police detective who's been reduced to conducting kind of restaurant health inspections after the woman that he was having an affair with, who's played by Michelle Monaghan, she makes a complaint after he assaults her abusive husband. So he's on the outs. And a tourist finds a severed arm in the off the keys when he's fishing. And Yancey takes this on. It's supposed to be cut and dry, just get the thing back to the widow, the new widow, and allow her to, you know, conduct this accidental death and see it out. But he thinks that there's more to it, and he starts his own kind of private homicide investigation. The monkey, in fact, the action shifts then to the Bahamas, and there's issues with the environment and property developers and things like that. Hyacin always has some kind of, you know, contemporary hook on his stories. And the monkey is an escapee from the Pirates of the Caribbean set who turns up as the pet of a guy called Neville. There's more because there's a terrifying voodoo priestess, Dragon Queen. She's played by Jodie Turner-Smith, who's absolutely fantastic. And there's, you know, billionaire property developers. There's a lot going on here. And in the middle of it all, you've got this kind of Vince Vaughn channeling Tom Selleck as this kind of Magnum PI character. He's very loose. He's got, you know, he's got good lines, a lot of banter, a lot of kind of chat. And there's depth and complexity to it too.
Okay.
So you think it's going to be cheap and Vince Vaughn-y, and it's actually not. There's a lot going on with it. Bad Monkey.
Excellent.
Bad Monkey on Apple TV Plus.
Okay. Sarah, Emily in Paris is back for its fourth season. Are people still watching this, yeah?
I hope so. I had never seen Emily in Paris until this week in preparation for this conversation. And I said, look, I'm going to go and I'm going to get a cursory understanding of what exactly it is that Emily is doing in Paris. It seems to me her primary struggle is that she can't speak French, and a lot of very handsome French gentlemen would like to kiss her. It's a hard life for Emily out there. I started watching it and found myself suddenly hours and hours deep into it. It is entrancing. I would call it a high fantasy television show about a world that does not exist for anybody. The fourth season, Emily has made her life increasingly complicated in Paris, is torn between two very handsome gentleman. One of her friends is pregnant. It is a glorious mess. And I kind of can't get enough of it. I'm very, very surprised by how much of a hold it can have on you. It's very sweet natured. It looks fantastic. The costumes are off the walls. There's really nothing I've seen like it. And it's produced by Darren Starr, who famously was behind Sex and the City 26 years ago, I think. So there was high pressure on it when it first came out in 2020, and a lot of criticism levelled at it for being vapid. It absolutely is vapid, but it's also a great time. So I would 100% send people towards it. The new series comes out on August 15th. There's a 5 episodes or so come out, and then it breaks and it'll be back in September. And what's coming in that new series is more giant set pieces, more high stakes or low stakes, high drama, I would say, activity in and around Paris.
So this could be the beginning of a critical reevaluation of Emily in Paris.
We're bringing her back.
The tide is turning. Okay.
Absolutely.
And
it's
the new season is on Thursday on Netflix. The first lot of that drops. John, you want to make an appeal for people to start watching Slow Horses on Apple TV before the new season starts.
This is the best thing on telly at the moment, Brendan. This is Slow Horses, adapted from the Mick Harron novels. Now, this new season 4, which I just watched all the way through, even though I had other things to do, I watched the eight episodes, 1, 2, 3, all the way through. That's season 4. That's back at the start of September. So you have a couple of weeks to catch up. If somehow this has passed you by, there's 3 seasons for you to watch. Again, on Apple TV Plus. Absolutely absorbing, slyly funny series from Heron's excellent novels. And it concerns the adventures of a gang of washed-up MI5 misfits, spies doing mundane legwork in a rundown office building somewhere in London under the supervision of Jackson Lamb, who's played by an indelible Gary Oldman as this kind of fragrant, drunken old spy. And this season is based on one of Heron's best books in the series, Spook Street, and has Jackson and his charges, including Jack Loudon plays this character, River Cartwright. They become embroiled in this long-forgotten Cold War remnant, which was a joint MI5-CIA program to breed a super soldier in a remote compound in France. And now that sounds a bit daft, I know, but this is a very crafty show.
Yeah.
It's built around characters.
Kind of high farce meets...
Well, it's funny. There's no doubt about it, but it's built around real characters with histories and regrets, and it's kind of a street-level take on Le Carré's glamorous world of super spies and Joes and moles and dead drops and all that kind of stuff. Okay. I love it, and I think it's just the best thing on TV at the moment.
Sarah, on RT1 on Monday, there is a show called The Cable That Changed the World. It's on 9:35 on Monday. And this, I know a bit about this story. It's an extraordinary story, isn't it?
It's absolutely incredible. The documentary covers the story of the laying of what might sound very mundane, but is actually surprisingly moving when you watch it. The laying of a cable under the ocean between Valentia Island and Newfoundland in Canada. And the way the documentary, and that cable redefined how people communicated across the world, allowing ships to communicate instantaneously. It was one of the first steps in international communication being instant. And obviously we live in a world now where people are listening to us speak at the moment that we're speaking. We live in accompanied by the internet. So what this documentary does really elegantly is it shows us where we started. It goes all the way back to the mid-1800s, and it looks at how the evolution of communication, how we moved from a nearly pre-literate society up through letters and up through Morse code, all the way to ships going across the ocean and putting down a piece of wire that would allow people to speak to one another. Okay. I found it very moving. I think it's a really, really great piece of work and would recommend people tuned in.
The Cable That Changed the World, RT1, that's on tomorrow night at 9:35. Listen, I know you both wanted to mention that the final season of The Umbrella Academy is on Netflix, so we'll just note that there, but that's all we have time for. John McGuire and Sarah Maria Griffin, thank you very much.